Hi everybody, I'm Jeff Suckendorf, CEO of UTD. I don't even know the name of my company anymore. Change. We did that 5 times.
Is the name we changed?
Yeah, it's UTD Scuba Diving now, not Unified Team Diving.
Well, it's Unified Team Diving or UTD Scuba Diving.
Or UTD.
Diving.
You gotta have an official name.
It's UTD Scuba Diving.
Okay.
All right, hey everybody. I was going to say welcome back, but more it's like welcome back to us.
Yeah.
So it's been a little while since we've knocked out an actual scuba diving podcast. I've been cranking out car casts.
Yeah, they're funny.
Are they funny or are they fun?
They're fun. I think the last one was really good. And I love these things. And like I said before, I used to do them here locally in Danish ever so often. And they're just so, how do I say, organic. Because, hey, there's no way to script a car cast, you know, this like,
yeah, you're driving, you know,
it's coming from the top of your mind, and I think it's good. I think it shows.
That's good. I've been concerned about the quality of the audio being crappy.
Wow.
And the one that's coming out next week is probably the crappiest of the
crappy. You were saying,
but we'll see how it sounds. Yeah, we'll see how it all works out, as long as people can understand it. But I did one that's coming up on style versus success.
Yeah,
which is kind of a big wall rock climbing thing is where it all came from.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's interesting, right? What's more important, that we are successful or that we're successful with style?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's good. It's kind of good. Yeah. You piloted the topic for me here yesterday when we spoke, and I think it's going to be a good one. So stay tuned for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's recorded. I just have to finish editing it, which I'll probably do today. So we'll put that one out around the time we do this one. But so I've been doing these car casts solo. How's that for a segue?
Oh my God, you nailed it.
So we've been thinking recently about not so much about solo diving, because, you know, we are unified team diving, as we've always said. We're not unified go screw off by yourself diving.
Well, that was a very political way of saying it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Usually use other wording.
It's a family show. So, you know, so we have this, you know, we've had this concept since day one, actually since day minus years.
Yeah.
With those of us who started UTD and were the originals and have been around for a long time, it's team diving. There's just no real discussion about that.
Exactly.
Every agency except us and maybe GUE has a solo diving class.
Yeah.
And I think it's insane.
It's funny, right? Because, I mean, I've been thinking about this basically since DEMA, right? To do something, to like voice out something more than what's in our name, you know, it's kind of on the nose, but to do something, make a video or do a podcast or something. And then, you know, I was listening to one of our instructors that have a great dive podcast with James Mott and Brando.
Is it a great dive podcast?
It's a great dive podcast. Yeah, exactly. They have a spin on the word.
They've done a great job with
that
name.
They've done that for sure. No, so I love those podcasts because they take such a jovial point of view, and they can just speak from their hearts, right? Because they're two people, not like directly representing anything else but their own opinions. And that gives them a certain level of freedom, I think.
Yeah. And James was one of the original 10 UTD instructors back in 2008. So, you know, he's been around the block 150 times.
Yeah. We've been diving together for so often. I'm going to meet up with him and some of his students here in April, actually. In Florida. So
awesome.
Very
That'll
nice.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So James and Brando did a podcast last week
on solo diving and about their opinions and they share our opinion, of course. And then here I was visiting the boat show last week and met up with all these, you know, fantastic people and at dinner at one point, we came to talk about solo diving. And, you know, then it's always this story about, yeah, of course, some of them have the opinion that when you solo dive, you're safer because you don't have a buddy to deal with. And you don't know if they're a muppet or an idiot that is going to kill you or drag you down to the depths of the ocean or, you know, all these scary stories come out. And I just said, well, I think it's all opinion, a matter of opinion and a matter of training. I think the majority of people, without getting ahead of ourselves in this podcast right now, but the majority of people that choose to dive solo probably do so because they think it's too task loading to also be mindful of a team. I think that's the gist of it.
Unless you need it.
Unless you scramble to need it. Yeah,
Yeah, which is
exactly.
where we're going,
But
but
then,
yeah.
and yeah, exactly. And then he went off on a segue. The guy I had the discussion with is like, hey, but you're an instructor. Do you not agree with me in saying that when you are an instructor, you're always solo diving with your students? Because the students are the students, and then you're the instructors, or you're solo diving. I said, well, yes and no, because I don't think it's that black and white. And I think we can talk a little bit about that, how we see that and how we deal with that as instructors under our flag.
Let's start with solo diving recreationally or technically or cavingly or however you want to solo dive, that the courses that are taught in solo diving and the concept that people who embrace those courses seem to believe is that if I have redundant equipment, I'm safe.
Exactly.
And it is, it you just cannot argue with this, with these committed solo divers. If I have a pony bottle, if I have doubles, triples, quadruples,
Yeah.
three pairs of fins, 14 SMBs, 16 knives strapped to every part of my body, I can get out of anything and I'm safe.
Exactly. So if we dissect it from like what would be in the mind of a diver who anticipates his solo diving career or likes to go diving alone, what would they think? They probably go down that path, right? Like you said, Jeff, like, okay, wait a minute. If my equipment fails, I can just make my equipment redundant and maybe even triple redundant. And then, I can always save myself. And sure, of course. I mean, if that's the argument, if you have one thing and yet your life depends upon, you bring two, and then if that one thing fails, you can use the other one. And you know what? Take three. That way, if the one thing fails and the second thing fails, you can have the third one. Perfect.
Okay, but here comes the money
But
shot.
here you go, exactly.
What's the one piece of equipment when you're solo diving you can only ever have one of?
Your dry suit.
Oh.
No,
Yeah, that was not my money shot.
but I you
Of course, it's your
Of
brain.
course, it's your brain. Of course, it's your
It's
brain.
like it's and you cannot. You cannot work your way out of problems if your brain breaks.
No. And this is funny, right? Because paradoxically, it is because of the equipment failures, people bring more equipment. And that means, more often than not, that the equipment becomes more intricate and more complex. Now, requiring more skills to deal with failures on this now more complex equipment. So,
And more brain power.
and more exactly, more brain power. So, I've had this in the past. And for many years ago, I was teaching in a lake in Germany, in the northern part of Germany, and was contacted by a father prior that knew through social media that I was going to be there. And he said, hey, I'd like to meet up and talk to you about training my son. It's great. So we meet up, and he introduces his son to me, and they all look like they've got DIR equipment, and this is going so far so good, right? And he says, "Yeah, I need you to train him to be a Trimix 60, a Tech 2 diver, 60 meters, 200 feet Trimix diver." I said, "Okay, what's his level of certification at this point?" "Well, he is an advanced open water diver," and I'm
Okay,
okay.
that's not unreasonable.
Well, that's fine. That's a great goal to have already now, so this young in his diving career. So, and I explained to him quickly, like we'd probably do a little checkout dive and see if we have to go through an essentials of technical diving program to get all the protocols and personal skills squared away. Oh, he is good. He was God's gift to the scuba diving industry, so he could swim backwards around me probably. Okay, great, perfect. But let's do a little check dive so we can, trust but verify that. Yeah, and then I said, well, we'll go over the first level is what we call tech creational, and it's the shallowest of the tech class with the least amount of deco gases and the least amount of deco time. But it's in some ways the hardest class to pass because this is where people get introduced for a thing we call critical skills, dealing with failures on the water using your personal skills you've learned through the essentials or mastered through training. And he's like, yeah, but he's so good, he can do his valve drills and da da da. And he was like pushing to jump over there where the fence is the lowest, you know, just go straight for the Tech 60. And I said, he'll miss a ton of nuance. And we go back and forth a little bit. I'm trying to explain to the guy that there is a method to our madness with regards to the progression in the courses. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it comes, yeah, but you know, between you and me, because I was talking to him about the team and how the team solves problems and how you, when we advance through our technical curriculum and CAVE curriculum for that matter, it becomes more and more about solving problems within the team and thinking as a cohesive team instead of just people who can solve their own problems with a valve shutdown. Yeah, but between you and me, you know that, you know, at one point going solo is always the safer option. And I'm like, wait a minute, back up here. No, we don't agree.
At no point.
At no point we don't agree. You know, come on, this is no. And then he was like, okay, but yeah, but I think so and so and blah blah blah. And he was really adamant that he had done dives, you know, and then out come the big dick stories. Oh, sorry, it's a family show.
No, I maybe not anymore.
You know, and he starts, you know, exaggerating about his diving palmares. Okay, well, it just doesn't work this way. And I gave him some arguments. And I said, listen, we can put this to the test, you know? And we're standing, he has a pickup truck. So we're standing in the back of his pickup truck. And there's these benches between the car, and my car was on the other side of the bench. And I said, can we do a test? You know, you just pick up your twin set, you sit here on the back of your pickup truck's bed, and put your equipment on as if you were diving. And then we go diving, and I simulate some failures, and let's see if you can fix them by yourself, you know, and without going completely through what we did and the failures. But I ended up giving him a failure that resulted in a total catastrophic loss of his gas because he took the wrong solution, you know, about mistaken valves and shutting out all valves and all this stuff, like that he made mistakes upon. And I said, see, this is what I mean. If you hear bubbles behind your back and close down a valve and the bubbles don't disappear, you can isolate, and now you're in maybe land. You have no idea what's going on. You have to have a team to efficiently deal with that failure. And yes, come on, you can do mirrors and you can do this, but let me tell you, if there's an O-ring on the high pressure system behind your back, one of the neck O-rings or the manifold O-rings, if they go, you cannot see with a mirror. There are so many bubbles in the water turns to milk around you. So it doesn't work. And yeah, you know, he kind of killed himself three times on the back of his pickup truck.
And I think it's interesting because I think that's the other piece of it. Then we'll get into the instructor thing. But you know, the people come into an essentials class thinking they're going to learn personal skills and how to use the equipment. It's kind of like the concept of an original recreational open water diving class in almost any other agency, where really what you're taught is how to use the equipment. You're not taught how to dive.
True.
What we do is first thing we do is we teach you how to dive, breathe horizontal, all of that. Then we give you equipment. When I learned to dive, they gave me equipment, they showed me how to use it, and then they never taught me how to dive. So what happens in essentials, it's kind of the same thing before people come into it, that they think, oh, I'm going to learn how to do a valve drill. I'm going to learn how to do an air share. I'm going to learn how to shoot an SMB. And that's true, you will. But really, what you're going to learn is why it's important to know these personal skills within the confines or the framework of diving in a team.
Exactly.
And in that situation, you're not really training reaching behind your head and shutting down a valve. What you're really training is what are you thinking about now while you're doing it? what happened a second ago to cause this problem, and what's going to happen in about 15 or 20 seconds when you get this valve shut down, you ask your teammate to come in and see if you did it right. So it's all about the training of the brain.
It is.
And it's a little bit about the training on the equipment because, you know, the equipment is just a barrier to between your brain and reality.
Exactly. During our IDCs, we constantly talk about this whole building block principle, right? And this is where the foundation is being laid. This is where we build upon personal skills, but the end goal is that you build a strong, solid, essential base of skills that give you a better understanding of how to handle your equipment underwater, and therefore it's tasking you less. So you keep more awareness to the rest of the team. So the whole end goal of the essentials class is that you can dive and be more aware on your team and in your surroundings.
And use your brain. So let's go to the gray area, right? Which is you're an instructor, you're on your fourth or fifth dive of an open water class, right? So you've done all the skills, you've been watching your students, they're always in front of you, you could see them all the time, and now they're leading you on a dive. So the idea is you're shadowing, right? Which means they are not paying attention to you. And we know they're not paying attention to you because they can barely pay attention to themselves and each other. So the question is, are you solo diving when you are shadowing open water students, you know, on a dive like that? And, you know, further, if you have a dive master with you, who's watching the dive master? Is the dive master watching you? Is the dive master watching the students? Are you, you know, who's going to help that person if something goes sideways? And I think everybody thinks, well, you know, I'm an instructor. I've got my wits about me. So if something, you know, goes wrong, I can reach somebody's gas.
And this is where the nuance comes, right? I mean, if we pause or park the why would you solo dive and why we think you shouldn't solo dive, like climax for a while, we'll come back to that in a minute, and look at it from a teaching point of view. Yes, of course, if you're swimming, and as we do, we teach our instructors to swim behind the students because we want to observe them at all time. Are we in effect diving solo? I would argue, yes, of course, you are. But therein lies the caveat. It is in certain dives where you are assuming risk based upon the environment and based upon your knowledge and skill set. So if we come back to what's the biggest issue with solo diving, in my regard and in your regard and in our regard as an organization, it's the brain function. Like if your brain stops working, if you are making wrong decisions underwater with regards to failure management, with regards to navigation, with regards to choices you make underwater that lead down the path of trouble, that's why you don't solo dive, because we as human beings are fallible. The equipment we have, we can always deal with that, right? I mean, there is accident reports with people with triple redundant rebreathers and they still die alone. Are you really going to tell me that every single rebreather destroyed underwater? Come on. It's I don't know.
No. And pilots also. I mean, there's a zillion stories of pilots in small airplanes running out of gas when their other tank is full.
Yeah, exactly.
I
So
mean, that kind of stuff happens all the
yes.
time. I had these friends up in Los Angeles where I used to live, and they were on a dive at the shore area called Redondo Beach. And it's very much like our shore down here at La Jolla Shores. It's just a big open, you know, pretty easy beach entry, sand, and it's shallow for a while, and it eventually drops off to, you know, 80, 90 feet, 25, 30 meters. And these guys in crappy visibility went and they did a training dive, something super easy, and they were down at like 60 feet, 18 meters, doing whatever they're doing. And then there's time to come home. Somebody calls the dive, and somebody's the captain, and he's nice. I mean, these guys are perfect, right? Perfect trim, perfect positioning, wing on wing, the whole thing. And this guy's got his compass right in front of his face, and they swim for like 15 minutes on the reciprocal.
Yeah.
They're basically swimming to Japan
Yeah, they're swimming outwards instead of
until
inwards.
finally somebody notices this and stops everybody, and they all look at their compasses and they all finally agree that they're going the wrong way. And they all turn around and they all swim 15 minutes back to their starting point where they finally see the shore, the surf, the what do you call it, the bottom start to come up at them,
Yeah.
and they realize now they're heading in the right direction. If that guy was alone, he's probably still out there swimming.
Yeah, he's probably still out there
You
swimming.
know, I mean,
Yeah.
he would end up a kilometer from the ocean, from the shore. So, you know, it was such a classic, simple error. And, you know, I mean, bad on the team because it took the team forever to figure it out, but at least they did. You know, imagine if you're in a cave and you get to your tee, and either, you know, your rem was put on upside down by accident, or, you know, you get to an intersection that looks like the intersection you marked, but has cookies, not arrows, and you thought, well, maybe I just forgot and used a cookie, and now all of a sudden you don't know where you are. And this is the kind of stuff that makes it complex. So when you're teaching,
Yeah.
for the most part, I would say you are in such a controlled environment.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, for the most part, you're like one step from confined water.
And there's difference, and this is where the nuance lies, I think. So when you're swimming in 30 feet of water behind the open water students, you know, during the briefing, the way we teach our instructors is you tell them where you are. And you're in communication with them. Either you're that close shadow diving behind them that you can almost touch them or pull their fin or touch down onto them and get their attention. Or you can use light signals. We always carry a simple light. And if it's a bit murky, like up here in the northern parts of Europe, we don't have to go very deep to get murky environment, then we can see light signals. So at least you can get their attention that, hey, whatever. You know, you're turned around, you're feeling queasy, you can't equalize. I mean, we're instructors, we're not superheroes, right? So
Well, not maybe not.
stuff like that can happen. So in an open water dive like that training scenario, what can happen to you that would be fatal, I would say, and bar a medical emergency, if you're getting a stroke or a heart attack underwater, solo or in a team, you're most likely gone. I'm gonna say in a team you might have a chance, but alone you're gone. I mean, and that's the gist of it, right? So at least now the team can pull you ashore.
Right. And
You
that's
don't,
the risk. I mean, we know there's risk. You know,
and that's the
diving is
risk.
not risk-free at any level. It's not risk-free in
No.
a pool. So.
No, exactly. And you know, I swim a lot. So, and sometimes I go swimming by myself in the ocean or in the lake. Now, when I do that, I have a buoy with me that I pull behind me. So, in case of, you know, if I get a cramp or something, I can just hold on to that buoy and float so I don't, you know, drown because I get a cramp or something like that. But other than that, I don't see it as a big risk to go swimming alone. And a lot of people frown on this. Now, you should always swim with a buddy, blah, 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 just in case of medical stuff. And yes, I agree. If you get a medical emergency, you're a goner. I'm a goner for sure. It's a risk I accept. I think I'm pretty healthy, and I think the likelihood of me having that medical emergency is low. Therefore, I assume that risk. Now, scuba diving, same thing. If you're in that scenario, swimming at 30 feet of water or even 60 feet of water, you, as the instructor, have the capability if you have a catastrophic gas problem. You know, tank neck O-ring on your single tank breaks and you start losing all your gas, you can go there and share gas with your students. The way we train our students, we won't be diving to that depth if they're not comfortable by just sharing gas, because we've been practicing that in the pool and confined in the shallows a lot of times before.
So I think what you're saying, this is interesting, right? And this is not a cut and dry deal. I think what you're saying is that a solo diver has gas available in redundancy. An instructor has gas available in their students. And a solo diving proponent would argue, what's the difference?
What's exactly? And I would say, well, there's a good point there, right? Because I think the risk of solo diving isn't equal regardless of the type of diving you do. Because in that regard, you could say, yeah, but then I have my pony bottle hanging on my side. So you have your student swimming there, and if my tank explodes, I can go to my pony bottle and exit the dive, and you can go to your student and exit the dive. So there's no difference. Well, you're right. There is no difference, except for the fact that if you have these things like, okay, you're going to blur the lines. Eventually, you're going to blur the lines. Like, where do we stop? Where do we swim? The problems with navigation, the problems with, where do you go? Forgetting things underwater. Did you hook up your dry suit? All that sort of stuff. That's what brings to my mind the benefit of a team. Now, is it always black and white, death or alive, survive or die? No. No, it's not. But hey, we don't dive to get a miserable experience, right? We don't go into the water to fuck up our navigation on purpose or struggle to get that hose from behind my back plate to fit in my dry suit while I'm ever so getting more and more squeezed on my way down. That's no fun. I mean, so I think the more risky dives get, like technical diving, cave diving, CCR diving, this is where the pendulum swings the other way, and you're assuming way too much risk because the equipment becomes more complex and failures take more brain power. You can make mistakes, and this is where the team can help you out.
So I was, we're back. This is a story that happened to me a million years ago. I was like a brandy new, newly minted instructor. I think the ink was still wet on the card. And I was helping someone teach a class, and it was pre-UTD. I mean, this is way back. And it was some Nowy class, and we had scooters that we used to get out because back at Redondo, again, to get to 60 feet took a lot of kicking and a lot of gas. So we would often take scooters on these dives just to get out there, and then we tie them off, do the skills, and then use the scooters to get home. And there were, I think, I don't know, two or three students and the instructor and me, and we had a bag tied off or in a screw or something on in the sand at the bottom, and we're at the top surfacing, talking, and the instructor says, "I'm going to take the students back, go get the bag, and I'll see you back on shore." And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't know anything." So I thought, that's okay. So we all go back down. We all grab our scooters. Those guys take off. And now I'm left to reel up the bag. I get to the surface. I stow the whole thing. I have to go back down to 15 or 20 feet, and now I'm scootering home by myself.
Yeah.
And those guys are already at the showers. And I'm like, this is creepy, right? I mean, we're sort of teaching a team class, and now here I am, condoned by the instructor, scootering back all by myself, thinking, odds of something going wrong, very low. Consequences, if something goes wrong, very high.
Very high, exactly.
And I think that's the risk homeostasis thing that we've talked about a lot,
Yeah.
right? You have a situation, and I think you use this the seatbelt
Yeah.
metaphor that, we wear a seatbelt not because the risk of hitting a tree at full speed is high, but the consequences of hitting that tree at full speed
It's dire. Yeah.
are high. The risk is very, very low, but the consequences are very high. And I think that's the same thing we get into with solo diving and or teaching, thinking you're a solo diver, is that the risk is low, but the consequences of something going wrong can be dramatic.
Exactly. And this is the point we're trying to make, right? I mean, as a solo diver by yourself, the equipment is one thing. You can re make that redundant, but there is, history books are full with people who die with redundant equipment. So th there must be something else going on. And this is where, in my mind at least, the train goes off the rails because they start down this solo diving path, and all the organizations you talked about that have these classes, even if they call it self-redundant classes or blah blah blah, self-reliant classes, solo diving courses, whatever, you know, it's usually in a recreational setting. And
Yeah, I guess.
I haven't seen them offering technically or technical solo diving. However, I do know for a fact locally here that there are instructors teaching certain technical classes from a solo diving perspective. Like, when you do this class, you need to be able to deal with all your own shit, you know, and especially when we go down the rebreather path. I've had it so much that a student of mine rings me up and says, "Ben, is it correct that when you dive on a rebreather, you cannot share gas with anyone?" And I said, "No, of course not. You should be able to share gas. Sure, of course." Okay, because I was diving in the club, and the guy I was diving with, she said, is diving on a rebreather, and in the pre-dive, I asked him, "How do I share gas?" I said, "Well, first of all, let me compliment you on the fact that you actually took the time to ask him. So kudos to you." And then he said, "Well, this is my, if my machine breaks, this is for me." I said, "Then what do I get?" And, "Well, you should carry a pony bottle,
Oh, God.
you know?" And I said, and she was confused, right? So yeah, whatever. And I said to him, "Listen," I said to her, "No, this is wrong. He should have a way to share gas with you. There's just no way. But you have a choice," I said to her. "You can just choose to not dive with this person. That's completely okay. And say, hey, you know, I would like to, you know, if you are able to share gas with me." And they were actually doing a dive to 100 feet, 30 meters. So this is not a depth anymore where you can say, "Okay, screw it. I'm just going to slowly swim to the surface, you know?"
Yeah,
I
no.
mean,
So
doesn't work.
it's interesting, right? So now we've just spent 40 minutes telling people, preaching to the choir, basically, because the people who
Yeah.
listen to this podcast are probably, for the most part, bought in.
Probably, yeah.
Although, you know, if we put solo diving all over the headline for this podcast, we'll probably get a new audience. But I think my next question is, what are the action steps?
Nah, okay. So take it a step forward. Take it a step forward.
So what do we do? What do we tell? I mean, let's go back to our IDC, right? So we're in an IDC. You and I just taught one together in Spain. You did one recently somewhere else, and I think it was here. And I don't know. We teach. I've taught a gazillion IDCs, and so have you. So let's look at what happens is if we're sitting in the IDC, and some well-thinking instructor candidate who's deeply ingrained in the UTD and the DIR philosophy says, I think I'm solo diving when I'm teaching. What do I do about that?
Yeah,
What do we say to them?
exactly. Well, like we said, we have a little topic. We discussed this, how to deal with this, right? So, A, make sure that the students you are taking with you in the water, like let's say it's an open water class or an entry level ish recreational diving class, be it open water, be it Essentials of Rec, be it Rec 2 Advanced, a dry suit mini, whatever. Entry-level recreational dive within the recreational confines, single tank, relatively simple from a planning and execution standpoint dive. First of all, the students have to make the dive plan. That's the first thing, so that they are able to execute the dive plan.
Right, they have to take care of themselves as a
They
team.
have to, they have.
Right.
I mean, they're divers. They're, if not, they are. It's only in the first two open water dives that you baby them. You know, do you help them with the dive plan? But they're still helping, you know, making the dive plan. So they're 100% aware of what it is that we need to do. It's not like, okay, let's go underwater, follow my fins, and I use pink fins so there's easy to spot, or I use yellow fins so it's easy to spot. It's always bugging me when I hear instructors say, my fins are brightly colored so the students can see me. You Muppet, the student shouldn't be able to see you. You should be able to see your student.
Exactly.
Anyway, sorry,
Exactly. Okay.
a rant.
All right.
But so it starts with that. Make sure that your students are the ones that are actually making the plan. And then you're in that plan.
Right. And that's the key, that you're in the plan. So the next thing is, like when we do simulated air shares, our symbol for that is I'm going to point at the student who I want to be out of air, and I'm going to make the out of air sign in a hand across my neck.
Yeah.
And I make it really clear before we go on this dive that that is the symbol for you being out of air. And I tell them very clearly, if I'm out of gas, you're going to know it
Yeah.
because it won't look like that and it
Yeah.
won't be calm, you
Yeah.
know? And so I think that's the next step is that we really define for them that there may be a situation where I'm out of gas as an instructor, and you, the students, are going to know it. And you're going to have to respond to that. All the other symbols I'm giving you that say, you know, hey, you, I'm pointing at the screen, you're out of gas. I'm
Yeah.
making that little out of gas sign. And so I think that's the other thing is in the briefing, we want to be really clear that you are not part of the team, but you might become part of the team really fast
Yeah.
if you need it.
And it's the simple things in these entry level classes. They're just the basics, you know? And let me just make clear. Yes, I know that running out of gas is very, very unlikely, and it's probably never going to happen unless you do it on purpose. You're on a liveaboard and you want to have the rest of your gas because there's a big shark underneath the boat, whatever. You know, not talking from experience.
Asking for a friend.
But gas, yeah, asking for a friend. But gas can become unavailable. I mean, I've had it on dives where all of a sudden my necklace starts free flowing because we dive in cold water here sometimes, and yeah, that happens. And hey, what do you do if you're in a single tank? You share gas and see if you can stop it. If you hopefully, but you probably share gas and end the dive.
I've had three BC failures where I've actually pulled off, you know, two dump valves and I had an elbow break. Now, in many ways you can deal with that by yourself, but it impacts the ascent. And all of a sudden, you know, as an instructor, now you're part of the team.
Exactly. It could spiral down into a cascade of other problems now, all of a sudden. So in these cases, so yeah, starts with the plan. Make sure that they're the ones making the plan and you're in it. And that's how I always do it. Because usually we have a goal to achieve on these training dives, right? We have to do, I don't know, basic six. Great. So the team, the students are the team, swim out to where they think is a suitable area to do this skill. Find the little sandy part of the bottom where we can set up a buoy, tie it off. We always make a little box, training box, so we have a reference point. And then when we are there, the captain in the team of students turns to me and says, "We're ready." Now I'm become the captain. We do the drills, whatever that means. When the drills are done and we're ready to head back, then I go to the captain and say, "You're the captain." And now he leads the team back. So at the whole point during the dive, they are aware of the instructor's presence and they are aware of their own responsibilities in that team. If something happens in my case on my equipment, I can go to them. If they get confused with compass navigation or choices underwater, I'm there to help. And usually it's them that get confused and not you. But it happens. Sometimes you get confused, like, okay, what was the
What was that
did we
heading?
do
What were, where's the
what
line?
where did we go? Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. And
all that.
then you gotta back up.
I mean, the
So
dreamiest thing is when you're shadowing a team of two or three new students and they turn around and look for you. I love that. That's
yeah,
super cool. That's
it is.
the warm and fuzzy. Oh my God, they do love me.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They still care.
They
Yeah.
still care. So there's one more piece of this that I want to talk about as we go through this is tag-alongs.
Yeah, I'll look at, let's get to that afterwards. Because
Oh,
now we're
you have
going into
more. Okay.
advanced training. Yeah,
Okay.
now we're going into technical
All right.
training, cave training, right? How do you deal with that as an instructor? Because now we're going into a hazardous environment with equipment that is complex and maybe, you know, on experienced dives, potential rebreathers and all that sort of stuff. So how do you deal with that as an instructor? Are you solo diving behind them? There, I would say no. You're not, because now you are an active part of the team. You have to be.
For any number of reasons. One is to either drive the skills or to make a mess of things on purpose.
Exactly. So you're just as smart as the gas plan and turn pressures. If you reach the turn pressure before the students do, guess what? The dive gets turned. But do you go to your team, the way we teach technical classes is a little bit different than out there. We don't teach critical skills in isolation of the dive, meaning the dives are real dives. We always say we have no training dives. Every dive is a real dive. The instructor is just there to put certain scenarios in place that makes the team think about an exit strategy. So, hey, how do you turn the dive? Well, give someone a failure they can't fix.
Yeah.
And the easiest one is, share gas. Or if you're in a cave, turn off the main light. That's the easiest one. Poof, main light.
I mean, that goes to recreational too, right? If you're doing a series of air shares, the students are told this drill is over either when I stop it as an instructor or you go back to the surface. So if there's three students, you do three air shares. After one, you cut. After two, you cut. After three, you don't cut.
And they let it go.
And then, we use it as a teaching moment for the instructors also, because now we're saying to them, how do you figure out what order to do these in?
Exactly. And that's in a and that's in only, I would say, in the open water class stage, for a timing based,
It could
like
be
we
in
do it
Rec
for
Two.
Rec
It could
2,
be,
maybe, yes.
I mean, it could be in anything, because what we're looking for, of course, is setting up the drills. So the person with the most gas or the lowest sac rate is the donor at the end.
Yeah, exactly. So when we do these classes, when I teach a tech class or a cave class, they are, of course, the team and they make a plan and they do the plan and execute the plan. But then just when they've done all their surface stuff, I swim up to them and say, hey, can you do me? do a bubble check on me, make and then I show a mod S and all that. Okay, great, perfect. And I'm with them when they do the pre-dive equipment match because it's just as important that my shit works than theirs. And then when we're underwater, you monitor them. And you monitor yourself. If you have a failure, you're no further away from the team that the team is from themselves, except you're in a different position. Now, team positioning is super simple. It's super simple. One question, or well, I guess if you want semantics, two questions. Can I see my team and can the team see me? If the answer to those two questions is simple yes, then you're in the right position. Now, if you're an instructor teaching one of these critical skills classes, can I see the team? Yes. Can the team see me? No, you're in the correct position.
You're in the right place. Exactly.
Because you don't want them to
Exactly.
see you, but you're there with an air gun or, filming from behind, observing them, putting things into place that make them think about what they're doing.
But I think that's a really interesting piece of it, though. I mean, what we've talked about for the last 10 minutes, which is, the biggest action step for me in dealing with this whole concept of is the instructor solo diving is make sure the team of students knows that you're not an isolated entity, that you are actually a diver in the same environment with the same equipment, with the same potential risk as they are, and that even though you're not doing the drills as part of the team or the navigation as part of the team, you are still part of the team. And I think that consciousness around teaching is the thing that solves the gray area problem, right? I think the solo diving as an instructor concept comes from the fact that instructors who think that they are not part of the group of students, part of the team they're diving with, just buy into the fact, well, those guys can't help me because they don't even know I'm here.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you change your consciousness around this and you say, okay, not only am I part of the team, but I'm going to explain to the students that I'm part of the team, even though I've got this different role, and that your responsibility is, probably not going to be needed, but, I may come to you for help like anybody else would. Then I think you kind of solve the problem then and there.
I think so too. And this is also one of the reasons why it is relatively difficult to become a tech or cave instructor in our organization, or I mean, difficult is maybe one way of putting it, but
Challenging.
it's challenging for sure because A, you're gonna have to be able to observe the team for whatever they're doing, come with some, building critique after the dive, just based on what you're observing. You're gonna have to check whatever they're doing during the dive is actually correct. So they're in a cave, not missing a T, or in a tick, not going over the depth or time, or all that sort of stuff. You have to be able to think for them as well. Plus, that you have to be able to put some failures into place that make sense. It's not just pulling down a like taking down a bucket of failure crap and dumping it over them
No.
in random order just to make them, scramble for their equipment and then pick a mask off in the middle of an air share and then, wrap a line around their fin to it, no, that's just BS. That's just ridiculous training. No one should do that. If the instructor does that to you, run screaming away and never pay him another dollar.
That's how we started the agency as part of it, right? It's like, let's make a playbook and let's make a plan and let's write down the failures for the, I mean, we've been down that road on podcasts a lot. We have a organized, structured plan for every class of what,
It's like I like to compare it to a chess game. Like you think 4 steps ahead.
but you
Like
always win.
but you always win. Yeah, the house wins. Well, sometimes you don't. You have to like play around. Sometimes they take a completely different rule or route out. But then you have something to talk about.
Yeah, there's
So
probably a chess game for that too.
there is reasoning behind the failures, and it's usually nothing more than emphasizing small mistakes they make, and you're testing them on equipment awareness and time awareness and all that sort of stuff.
And I have had the conversation with them that's like, hey, where was I during all of this? Normally the answer is, I have absolutely no idea. And sometimes that's a good answer and sometimes it's troubling. But again, we want them to know that you're there as an instructor, that you're part of a team. Same with a dive master, that, in some ways, having a dive master makes your job as an instructor harder because now you have basically two teams. You have your own team and then you have the other team. So it's all of that.
Yeah, to finish it off with regards to the whole, are you solo diving as an instructor? So yes, you are to in effect, but in it depends on the level of training of the student, and the further we progress into these technically minded diving courses like Cave, Tech, CCR, the more it requires from the student to be able to also help you out and to be able to. For you to be a part of the team. And it's funny because to finalize, CCR training, for example, is done on open circuit by the instructor. And when you tell that to some people, it's like, what? No, that's crazy. I'm like, wait, why is that crazy? Because you have to be able to demonstrate skills underwater. Well, I mean, that's another topic for podcast, demonstration of skills underwater in this day and age. Come on. It's so archaic.
We
It's
have
so
YouTube.
archaic.
I know.
We have video, we have dry runs. There's better ways of explaining someone than making them go underwater, especially in the beginning level, and having a chance of seeing whatever you're just in minutia displaying underwater to
That
your
they
best
won't
abilities.
remember or
They won't
absorb.
remember, they won't be able to do it. Anyway, that's a side note. But dad, you have to be able to demonstrate that you're on the same equipment and blah, blah, blah. No, I just want to make sure there's a safe environment for them. Being on the rebreather takes more management underwater, regardless of who you are. So if I'm teaching on a rebreather, I'm on open circuit because I want to make sure that I can help them out with buoyancy issues without looking at my PPO2. I want to make sure that I can focus on them 100% and not having to worry about my machine and my loop and all that sort of stuff. It's not going to happen. On the
So I want to. Here's what I want to do. I want to put on one of those Groucho Marx glasses, nose, and mustache things, and take a solo diving class.
Yeah.
I'm so curious about this. So, I have a long history
Well,
before.
I have a shortcut for you, Jeff.
What's that?
Take our first day of a rescue diver, UTD rescue diver
Yeah,
class.
that's
That's
true.
your solo class.
There
It's
you
about
go.
self-rescue,
Yeah,
nothing else.
but I want to know how the others teach it. But
That's funny, though,
you know,
because.
it's interesting because so I'm a very, very experienced small airplane pilot, right? Aerobatics, commercial, taught forever, blah, blah,
Yeah,
blah.
you turn off your engines in
Yeah, we turn
mid-flight,
upside
right?
down
That
and
sort of
we
stuff.
point straight at the ground at 200 miles an hour. But every 2 years, no matter what, I still had to take a biannual flight review with an instructor in order to keep current. And so I would walk, I would, I've got thousands of hours of flying and instructing, and I would walk into an airport. Often I did it where I didn't know anybody. And, I have made an appointment, said, hey, I need a BFR. I've got some time, blah, blah, blah. And I'd get, some kid with, 300 hours who's trying to build time to be in the airlines. And we do a BFR. And I wouldn't tell them anything. Nothing. It's like,
Until you go inverted.
yeah, never quite got that far. But it's like, what, teach me something. Look at my flying skills. And I was always a good pilot, good student. I never like acted like a moron, but teach me something, show me something. And I was always just so fascinated by how little I was able to get out of these people when I just asked them to find some deficiency and teach me, because I was curious how that would make me a better instructor. And I did this for years and years and years and years and years. Now I want to go take, an SDI solo class. But I have to do it someplace where nobody knows me, because I really, I don't want to, I want to walk in there, rent gear, blah, blah, the whole thing. I want to find out what the story is. And I want to see if there's any help given to the idea that the only piece of equipment you don't have two of is a brain.
It's the brain, and that's what it turns down to. If you're underwater, and this is, I think, this is why in technical diving you see these fatalities of solo divers with perfectly working equipment because the brain stopped working. And even though the brain works in a team, and this is why sometimes the argument gets brought up that, hey, see, there are two divers and they both died. Then it's a skill issue. I spoke a little bit after James and Brando's podcast with James, that complimenting on them on their podcast, and saying that we were probably going to do a spin-off to that, talking about the instructor's role as a solo diver in a team, blah blah blah. And he said, yeah, well, great, that's a good idea. And then he hinted me a video, an old video by a UK-based instructor called Mark Powell. This is from 2012 or something like that. And it's funny because I looked at that video presentation he did, and he focused a lot about accidents reports from the BSAC, from the British Subaqua Club. Where they highlighted solo diver fatalities, and most of them were to do with team separation. So it didn't start off as a solo
Yeah,
dive,
but it became one. Yeah.
but ended up as a solo dive, became one. So my argument is they were a solo, but just two divers happened to be in the same body of water at the same time. But that's beside the point. And that's also the conclusion, because he has some interesting points of view in that video, actually. Even though he teaches the SDI solo diver class, to be honest. But his conclusion is, and I think he's very right in that, is that the team skills are so poor that it's so hard to do a proper team dive for them because they've never trained it, that they opt to dive solo because it's easier. Oh my God, you have these Muppets that can't control their buoyancy. They're up and down and behind me and left of me and underneath. And then they're the camera out of their pocket and they're shooting off after a starfish that's chasing them. It's this crazy. And then I go on by myself. I don't have to deal with this, person. And then stuff happens. And it's funny because he concludes also that when you go down the technical line, going solo might not be a good idea. Even though he has taught many of these in his own accord, so SDI classes. So it's funny that when he then looks at the accident reports of the divers that did go out solo, it's usually in the technical area, cave diving solo, for example. And it goes down that path. And I think it's a very funny video. So if you have the chance, go browse it up on the internet or something. But what got me in the end was that he rounded up his speech with a little plug for himself, saying he's acknowledging the fact that the reason why we see these separation and these solo diving and incidents is because the team diving skills on a whole in the industry are so poor that he's now starting to offer team diving workshops.
Oh, that's novel.
So sign up with me, blah 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 blah. You know, this was back in 2012.
We were going
So
strong. Yeah,
this
but we
is
were
like
going
12
strong at
years
that point.
ago.
Yeah. It's funny, when I met Sherry, my wife, who was a pretty experienced diver at the time, and we were going to go do, so I think we were going to go to the Red Sea. And, you know, so we got her gear squared away, and I got her in a pool and sort of converted her into, you know, what we do in long hose and air shares and basic stuff like that. So, you know, and she had pretty good buoyancy control. What I didn't expect was the first dive we get in the water and she goes left, and I'm like, yeah, wait, wait a minute. And I'm like swimming, 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 trying to catch her. And I realized that we hadn't spent any time, because she was experienced and pretty competent, on team skills, but she came through the recreational system where that was never addressed. And early on in that trip, I believe we did a night dive. And it's like, look, you can't go more than like a meter from me, 2, 3 feet. That's your limit. And, you know, I think when she figured out that that was actually kind of more fun anyway, you know, we got her shifted to the concept of team diving. But it was funny because I'm like, oh, that's not a team diver. You know, we had to turn her into one,
No,
but
exactly.
competent and experienced with the equipment and buoyancy and, you know, monitoring gas and things like that. She just didn't have team skills. She does now. Yeah.
And I mean, we could talk for, like this for an hour more, to be honest. I could come
We
with some.
talked about that actually. It's like, well, when we started this recording, it's like, we have an obscured questions podcast in queue. And I thought, well, let's just make this solo diving thing part of the obscure questions. And then it's like, oh no, we can fill an hour. Well, you know, here we are, still going strong. So
Yeah.
anyway, send
No.
us your thoughts on this. I'm really
Yeah.
curious what everybody thinks about the idea of, you know, are you solo diving as an instructor? And we can do some follow-up Q&A on this. So just drop them to info@utdscubadiving.com and we'll both get them and we'll follow up. So
Definitely. It would be interesting
awesome.
to hear your
Yeah,
points of view.
we'll turn it into a podcast. What else? So we have another one in queue, obscure questions. We'll do that in the next week or two. I've got another CarCast coming out right away. We have an IDC on the East Coast of the United States. You said April.
Not in Sweden, actually.
Oh, in Sweden.
Let me
Okay,
see.
and then you've got Cave and Tech in
Yeah.
coming in
Got a local
Florida.
essentials class soon. Then we have a side mount thing. We have some rebreather stuff. Yeah, we have the cave stuff in Mariana in
Florida.
Florida. That is at the end of April. And then we have a rebreather class with still spaces at the end of April, also just straight afterwards. There's
Is that
still,
here? That's in the US,
yeah,
right?
that's in Florida also. So spots available for that one. Then we have cave class in France. And after that, we have an IDC in the Northern Europe, I said here, and that's in Sweden. It's going to be at the last week of May.
Okay, awesome. And then I think I'll be in Korea sometime in mid-May, visiting with our friend Jason Park and his team. So if
Oh, nice.
anybody's anywhere near Seoul, let me know and maybe we can all meet
They've
up.
just done an epic cave
Yeah.
exploration.
Yeah,
They were
that.
the as a team, actually, apropos, were the first to push this cave further than anyone has ever done, also solo. So it's exactly the
They
same
didn't
what we
do it
did in China.
solo. They did it as a team,
No,
though.
no,
But solo
but
divers have pushed this.
yes, but they couldn't get as far as they did with a team,
Amazing.
exactly the same like we did in China.
Yeah, perfect.
So.
So, all right. So, thanks everybody for listening. Be sure to leave us a rating and review. You can get this podcast wherever you get your podcast, which would be Apple, Pandora, Spotify, the whole litany. And yeah, tell all your friends, and we will continue to record these, and we continue to get more traction on them. And thanks everybody for being our audience. We appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We'll Perfect. See you on the next one.
See you on the next one.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Stay safe and dive together.
Just looking inside. Hell is going outside. One way. Working down the street.